Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 158 is coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Portal Game Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and for more great podcasts, you can go to www.dicetowernetwork.com and find all sorts of other awesome gaming and gaming-related podcasts there. Howdy, everybody. This is episode 158. These are my games played in August and September of 2020. I'm your host, The Brant, and I'm glad to be here. I'm actually sitting in our now YouTube studio that we built in the back room of the store, so that's reminding me to tell you to check out our YouTube channel, which is called Step Into the Portal, because with COVID and being close to playing, we wanted you to have an opportunity to see games played, because in addition to retail and shopping and going to meet up with friends, we know that people like to see games played. That's part of going to a store, is you get to see minis on the table, cards getting thrown around, wooden bits all over the place, and just people having a good time. So that's what Larry and I have been doing. The goal for the channel isn't be exclusively Larry and I, but currently it is. And it's also pretty exclusively Marvel Champions right now. That seems to be the thing that people are watching the most. So we're putting up a lot of other gameplays and whatnot. And we are live every Thursday night at 6 p.m. playing Marvel Champions, as well as some other content that goes up maybe once a week or so on there. But that's the current plan. So check it out. If you have not, tell your friends, like and subscribe. The more people we get, just the better that works, and the more you know, opportunities we get for other things and whatnot. And put a lot of time and effort and money into it, so we want it to be useful to people. So you can let us know. You can email me at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com and let us know. All right, so this is super late, me doing my games of August and September. So what is happening right now is that obviously there's COVID, and so I'm just not playing nearly as many games. I'm playing a lot of Marvel Champions because that's something easy for me to play by myself. And there aren't as many games. That's a weird thing to say. There are plenty of games to be played, but there's just not as much new and crazy coming in. And then I started school, so September was like super sparse. In my app, there's like six plays, which is not normal. Usually I see people saying like, oh, everything's really sparse, I'm not playing a lot. And I still tend to be playing a lot, but it's been trickier. Also, I'm sitting in campaigns. Like, my family is playing Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. So when I'm getting those nights to play with my family, we're playing the same thing. And I'm not going to review Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion for you. In fact, I didn't even put it in my list here. I figured Marvel Champions, Gloomhaven, they're out. I've talked about them enough. Let's let the other games jump in here. So through those 2 months, I have 28 games. Some that were generally not very good. Some that were okay. Some that were good and some that were great. And the great ones, I'll tell you, were kind of older ones, but they're good to talk about and bring back. So I think without further ado, we'll jump into the list here and get going. So 28 on the list that I played is Hocus Pocus. I believe it has a surname as well, or a following name, but I can't remember what it is, and I don't have these games in front of me, so there's that. But Hocus Pocus is a Disney board game. Or card game. It's a cooperative game, and it's, you know, it gets its name from the Disney movie that came out in the 90s with the Sanderson sisters, which is my last name. So those are my sisters, apparently. But perfect timing for this game, you know, this time of year. Everybody wants to play those. So it's like a light family game, and you're trying to, like, match symbols in the cauldron to get it to explode, and then it stuns one of the sisters, and if you stun the sisters three times, you win. And you hold your cards so they're facing you, but it definitely feels like Hanabi, where you're trying to communicate with the cards you play, and then there's a bunch of tiles. It just, the communication didn't work. Like, we played twice, and it was just so hard to communicate, and people were frustrated. Like, it felt like something you had to learn to communicate, and that's all well and good, but at a family weight, it was tricky. So it didn't go over so well with my family, but maybe it will with yours. So that is Hocus Pocus. Next up, I was really looking forward to this game, and I would say it disappointed me. This is Truffle Shuffle. So this is from AEG, and it's the designers of Point Salad, which is a phenomenal game that I point people to all the time in the store because it's just so simple to shuffle and play. And Truffle Shuffle definitely has that same thing. So it's truffles, not the mushrooms. It's truffles, the chocolate treats. Now, I'm not a chocolate fan myself. In fact, I don't like chocolate, which makes everyone cringe in fear that I am human. But I am. There are those of us that don't like chocolate. But they do look delectable. They look delicious. So you're laying all these cards out in a grid, and you're doing a draft. And there's a term for this style of drafting where it's like laying out a pyramid almost. And you draft kind of going up. They do it in Seven Wonders Duel. You're drafting cards, and then you get to basically choose to play sets or not. And you're trying to complete, you know, essentially poker hands, although they could be like three-card poker hands or five-card, whatever it is. And there's a bunch of cards you draft that are like wilds, or you can draft two next time, and they've got colors and numbers and whatnot, and you're completing sets. The real disappointing part to me was that you then do that three times exactly the same. The one element being you can't hold over more than two cards, so it's forcing you to discard. So it wants you to, by the end of the round, play your sets, not hold them to make mega sets for the end. I wish that those rounds changed. I wish there was point differentials. I wish there was three different decks for those rounds. Then I think the game would be interesting, but it stays kind of flat. Whereas Point Salad doesn't, because all the cards have a different ability. It feels like if there were more abilities on these or something, it might be more interesting. But that is Truffle Shuffle by AEG, my 27th favorite game of August and September of 2020. All right. Next up is a game from Devir. It's Paris, La Cité de la Lumière. So it's talking about, well, Paris, it says it in the title, but it's the City of Lights. And it's a two-player game, and it was actually pretty interesting in design. You're playing in two rounds, so you're putting down these polyominoes to kind of like claim space. And you want to like surround lanterns, and you want to be able to play like these other tiles that are going to be buildings to score points on your tiles. And you're kind of clearing out space, and you can draft like extra abilities. And then the next round you can like, or no, you draft the buildings that you're going to play. And then the next round you can draft abilities and play the tiles that you drafted. Anything that didn't get drafted is set aside and nobody can play it. And it seemed really interesting, like, oh, there's this draft and this double draft, and then there's abilities to change things up. But essentially, you claim territory, and unless you're really bold and you're like, you know what, I'm going to build over there on what you were trying to do, which breaks my own strategy but also breaks yours, in which case you just throw things into chaos and everybody's score kind of gets lowered. It didn't seem like there was a lot of places to go. The abilities were interesting, and they were certainly like game-changing in ways, but ultimately not. Like, it wasn't that big a deal. You could kind of adjust and adapt, or you just don't, but your opponent can't either, and it's only a two-player game. It's nice it comes in a box, and the like a little box, like the two-player game size box, I guess, and the city is, like, set right in there, so you play right in the box. So it's definitely, like, a nice package, but I didn't find the game overall that exciting. That's my 26. Number 25, Pandemic Hot Zone. I think it's Pandemic North America Hot Zone. And boy, this game couldn't have come out at the wrong time in terms of what's going on in North America. But so the game is trying to be tiny pandemic. It's trying to be pandemic in 20 minutes. And it totally pulls it off. And if you listen to my review from the last episode, it's just I don't think I want to play 20-minute pandemic. I think I want to play 60-minute pandemic. And I did love 20-minute Ticket to Ride. So I don't know why. I don't know what the difference is. I don't know what my feeling was. But we did play it a couple times, and it was like, well, I guess if I want to play that in 20 minutes, but I don't know that Pandemic is something I'm trying to play with, like, grandma and grandpa or with little kids. Like, I feel like Pandemic just kind of takes that stuff up, where Ticket to Ride is like, oh, if I could play this in 20 minutes, I could really get into this in terms of that. So that's where it fell, 25. 24 was Tapestry. Man, I remembered liking this game and then kind of being like, but it's not amazing and the price point's high and kind of all those things. But I was like, nah, but I think it's a really fun game. So I was like, let's drag it out again. So Kath and I played a two-player game. It was not fun. We did not have fun. Now, I still think it's a good game. I think that particular one, like, I think I scored 200 points. It's Kathy scored 108, and that is so abnormal. Usually she would be the one to score 200. 108's really low in that game. It was just frustrating for her, and it was just not very interesting for me. I went up the exploration track. Our abilities weren't that good. There is the expansion coming out, so I'm looking to play that one, Plots and Ploys or something like that. So I will play it one more time, but I don't know. I might be done with Tapestry. Wasn't that interesting this time. It's kind of been a year of digging some of those games off and going, oh no, did I like that game or not? So there's that. Number 23 is Ride the Rails. I really like Ride the Rails. This is from Capstone Games. It's originally a Winsome game. It's a train game, and we reviewed this kind of during our Gen Cant weekend or non-con, whatever it was. And there's a lot of interaction, a lot of counting, a lot of forcing your players, a lot going on. And ultimately, I really enjoy the game, but where the barrier was like this supposed 45-minute game was like running for us like an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. And that was just a lot of keeping up with the math and people trying to tell you, oh, if you do this, then you're going to be in first and they're going to be in second. I'm going to be in third. But if you do this, then you'll be in second and be poisoned. Ah, and it was just so much. I found it a little overwhelming. So I really like the Irish Gauge package better. It played in 45 minutes and kind of had all of that. But certainly if you're like a rail fanatic, this is going to be great because you'll have two totally different games. They're nothing like each other in terms of that. So I would totally play Ride the Rails again, similar to Tapestry, but I'd have to think about how many people I'm playing with and the teach. I think with number of players, you decrease the number of turns. So that could be helpful and whatnot. But yeah, there's a lot of interaction there that gets tricky in terms of time. And I'm not one averse to playing long games. It's just when it feels like it's going to be a quicker game and then it jumps up there, gets a little trickier. Number 22 is Last Defense. This little game from Funko Games, I believe. And it's like a complete family game, but what they're trying to do here is play off of the app. So you've got an app that goes with it, and there's like aliens and blobs and all sorts of things attacking the city, and you're just rolling some dice to tell you how far you can move and how many cards you get to draw, and then you're trying to play sets to save scientists and use the scientists to send those monsters back where they came from. When you clear all the monsters off the board, you win. And it's like a 20-minute timer. The part for the game that I don't enjoy is that it's got like basic and expert. And expert, there's no way expert is much more difficult. So it's tricky on that front. So that was a little disappointing to me. But otherwise, it's a really fun game. Kids really enjoy it, et cetera, et cetera. So, kind of neat. Last Defense. 21, Harry Potter House Cup Competition. Yeah, so House Cup Competition is actually a great game. We enjoyed this greatly. I played it with Larry and Mike from the store. And, overall, it was a really enjoyable game. We were surprised how much like thought there was into like casting these spells and worker placement and all this. But man, like it's so devoid of the Harry Potter theme. You get a house, but all the characters are the same. Doesn't matter if I have Harry or if I have Seamus. Like they're all the same. There's no differential. So we found that to be a little disappointing. There's a great part where you're putting these gems in to count your score, which is really good. So it's like right there. If somebody's like into Harry Potter and they can kind of put that theme in, I think they'll do really well, but if it's like Harry Potter's what you're going for, the theme's not there. But it's a pretty decent little Euro game there. Next up is Titanic. This is designed by Daryl Andrews. The publisher is Spin Master. And Titanic is kind of weird because it's like the sinking ship, and then you're trying to rescue everybody and gather various like artifacts on the ship. So you're kind of like a hero in that sense. But it feels weird, like you should be trying to just get off this ship. But you're putting people in lifeboats and everything and then scoring points and you're competing to do it, which is a little funny, but I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not cooperative. You're definitely competing. But it wasn't like super take that. The theme is a little weird. It's a little weird. And then they have all these cards. The cards are super random, so they're trying to put that piece in. But all in all, I still had fun with the game. It was light. There's a weird thing with marker boards, but I thought it kind of worked. It seemed easier to put pieces out on the board, but all in all, it was pretty fun. I don't know. I mean, Titanic is this old movie that's very popular, but I'm not screaming for a board game about it. But it was a nice price point, and it was fun to play. I would play it again. It had little special powers and everything. Yeah, so there's a decent number of just kind of randomness going on, but it works pretty well. 19 is The Magnificent. This is a Euro game from Board and Dice. And in this game, you are a traveling circus, and you're trying to go to various places to bring your, you know, you're going to post that you're going to show up and you're going to travel, and then you want people to be at there. And then meanwhile, you're building your camp with all these tiles, and there's a bunch going on, and it's dice drafting, which is interesting. And then you have to kind of like pay for those resources at the end. There's a lot of interest here. I actually only got to play this once, which is probably what puts it lower on the list. I want to try the solo mode. It did seem to kind of just get out of control for one person and run that way. So I would say that was kind of my biggest negative overall. But you know, it was a pretty fun game. The Magnificent. In fact, now that I'm talking about it, it would move up my list with another play if that play went well. All right, next up at 18 was the, I guess, long-awaited. I don't know if it was took that long, but the much-anticipated Mariposas from AEG, and more specifically from Elizabeth Hargrave of Wingspan fame. And Mariposa's a great theme with butterflies and a great graphic design, and you're moving from Mexico up into North America and then trying to get back over multiple generations to return. Works out really well. The mechanism is nice because it's simple. It's just draw a card, play a card, and you have two, so you're picking what you want to play. It does lead to kind of a small amount of decision space, but that's what keeps the game moving. If it had a large amount of decision space, I think it would be really frustrating. So it just kind of is where it is. There's no way it can match Wingspan. I mean, it's just such a great game. It's not going to be up there, but Mariposas is very fun in its own right. It's actually something that I want to try to stream with Kathy, so I want to get that on there because I think people would enjoy seeing that game and kind of seeing where that's at. So we'll try to do that at some point. But ultimately, to me, it just felt like one of those games where it's like, Sony pulls it out, I'll play it, but I'm not going to be, you know, running all over the place to get it played. Number 17 is My First Carcassonne. Now, this is not one of my favorite games, but it just plays so well with kids. It's so good at recreating Carcassonne in a kid format. I mean, this one and My First Stone Age just know what they're doing in terms of getting kids in, engaged, playing, time frame. I mean, this game is like, I mean, adults are going to play this game in 5 to 10 minutes. With kids, it's like 10 plus minutes, which is exactly what they want to play. So the kids in my house just beg to play this game all the time. Beg! They want to play this game all the time. We play once. We don't play once. We play three times. And they have a blast. So it just goes over really well. So that was my 17, My First Carcassonne. 16 is Something Wild. This is a card game, like a Disney-based card game. Again, I think it's Funko. I actually don't know the publisher on this. But they got a bunch of different versions. So it's like Toy Story and Little Mermaid and Disney Villains and Nightmare Before Christmas. And you could put them together if you want to, and it actually is a pretty interesting experience when you put them all together. So individually, what's happening is you have to like collect these scorecards by making sets. So a set is three cards of the same number or three cards of the same color in a row. So a run in the same color or the same suit. And that's what you're trying to do, but as you draw cards on your turn, and then you play a card, they have abilities on them. Some of them do. It's not overly complicated. Also, the card in the center has an ability, and if you play a card that's the color of the card in the center, you get the little figure that comes with the little pop figure. Oh, that's why it's Funko. Comes with pops. So you get the little pop figure, and now you can trigger either the ability that's in the center or an ability that you've already collected. When you complete a set, you discard it, you draw the top card off that ability deck, and now you have that ability whenever you have the Funko character. So you're fighting over the Funko character, which is fun for like kids and family because they're into just like, ooh, can I have that? As well as trying to complete whatever tasks you're doing. And it plays out pretty well. Now, when you shuffle them all together, it's really interesting because you can collect the different Funkos and everybody can have a special power. It does tend to go a little quick, like somebody will just run away with it, so it's a little smoother. So I might increase that to like get five cards or something, five sets. But there's lots of interesting abilities. It's fun to play, and it's collectible. So I really enjoyed that one, Something Wild. The kids like it a lot, and then they wanted to put it away, so I'm not sure exactly where that is. Another kids game, Outfoxed. This is just a classic deduction game. It's so good. Really fun. Game where you're just trying to, like, you roll dice and you can either move so that you can look at a suspect, one of the foxes who stole the pies or ate the pie or is going to eat the pie, stole the pie and is running away with it, or you can look for items to see who they are. So you're either kind of seeing who the people are, and you're literally trying to just deduce, like, okay, a monocle. If they have a monocle, they might be guilty. But if they don't have a monocle, then they're off. They're free. So you kind of get to discard them all, and it's just classic deduction. And it's a blast, and it's great for kids to learn that, like, logic and deduction, because the game comes first and the deduction comes second, which I think is really good for learning. Next up is Stampede, this little card game from WizKids, that's really neat, where you're just kind of, like, drawing a card and then playing a card in front of you, and all the cards have special abilities. It reminds me of a simplified version of Guildhall, where the take that isn't so crazy. And you're either trying to get one of each of the nine animals in front of you, or five of a kind. And then they all just have, like, a special ability or an action that you take. So if I play a giraffe on the table, it might tell me, switch one of your cards in your hand with one card that's in the center of the table. And you switch so you can gather up those other cards that you're looking for. And you just keep playing till somebody wins. And that's how it goes. It's really simple, but I have a blast with it, and I never got to try partners, but I thought that would be interesting because you have to get both partners to complete their tasks. Cool, now we jump into the games that I think are really good games. So first up on this list is Tiny Epic Dinosaurs. I really had a lot with that one. I'd say it was my favorite Tiny Epic game. I imagine that Tiny Epic Galaxies would be my favorite in that series, but Kathy doesn't play space games, and I don't have it, so... But I really liked the Dinosaurs one. I thought it was neat. There's some frustrating parts. The solo mode is tricky, and it's really cool. I don't have the version with the... I don't have the Kickstarter version with the extra, like, science module, but I think that one really kicks things up a bunch, so I enjoy that. But Tiny Epic Dinosaurs is a great game from Game & Games, my favorite of the Tiny Epic series, and I definitely suggest you check it out. I thought it was really good. And the Dinosaur Meeples are awesome. Next up is Tekkenhu. So Tekkenhu is from Board and Dice. This is their follow-up in the Zulkin, Teotihuacan, now Tekkenhu series. And I've only had a chance to play this solo. It was very good, but I haven't had a chance to play it multiplayer. And so that's probably why it falls this far down the list, because it's hard for me to put things way up there if I've only played them once. I guess that's my thing. Other people might think differently. Yeah, people might think differently, but I kind of move games up as I play them, personally, in terms of all that. But Tekkenhu's really neat. I mean, you're going into a heavy Euro game here, at least medium weight, depending on what you're used to playing normally. And it's got this spinning obelisk and colored dice that are like the shades of the sun rising and setting. And if you're in the shade, different things happen. And then just all these sections around... where you're building in to score various points and ways and endgame points and set yourself up. And it's dice drafting. You're drafting those dice from the center and you're trying to balance them out. You don't want too many tainted dice versus pure dice. And you can get upgrades. I mean, you name it for a Euro game, it's in there. It's very satisfying. I feel like I like Teotihuacan best of all of these. But again, I've only played the one Tekkenhu and a lot of people like this one best. So... got to get those other plays in, but that is Tekkenhu. It was excellent, the one play I had from Board and Dice. Next up is the Exit the Game Theft on the Mississippi. This one was really good. This is the first time I played an exit game where there were four concurrent puzzles. Once we solved those, there was kind of one for us to do, and then four more concurrent puzzles. It's like suspects on this boat heading down the Mississippi, and so you've got four different suspects at a time, and so each person can work with one. We were playing with four. I don't know how that would have worked with one or two. You'd have all those clues going at the same time. But that was really neat to me, so I enjoyed that a lot. I don't have a lot to say about the exit games. They're definitely my favorite of all of them, although... I think... wow, I can't remember the name of it now. I don't remember the name of them. But I think those ones are also good. I'm excited for the Star Wars ones that are unlocked. Unlocked. That Unlocked series is also very good, and I enjoy playing those as well, and I'm excited for the Star Wars ones. But this one was really good. So if you're looking for one with four players where everyone can be doing something at the same time, especially if you played a lot of these, I think this was a good one to play. Number 10 is Runestones. Wow! I'd heard about this game, but did not realize how good this game was. I got a chance to play a couple times now. I think specifically with Kathy every time. Runestones is a Rutger Dorn game published by Queen Games, and in this game you are like collecting cards of creatures, and then you're playing those, and you're trying to ascend the throne to be the, like, high druid in the forest. It's got a great forest appeal, magical creatures. This is, like, the thing that Kathy asks for in a theme all the time. Little bit of darkness with some, like, dark fairies or pixies or something like that. What would they be? Sorry, I can't remember. But yeah, so on your turn, you can, like, draft a card. You can, like, discard cards to draft, or you can play the cards. When you play cards, you play two, and they all have numbers on them. And so you activate their abilities, and then the higher number one goes away. It's out of the game. So you're, like, thinning your deck while doing that. So you have to kind of make that choice. Yeah, it was great, and the expansions were seamless. That's the best part about Queen Games, is you can throw the expansions in pretty quickly, and they're seamless. So that one was awesome. Nine is a roll and write that I enjoy a whole bunch. It's Divvy Dice from Stronghold Games, and I really, really like this one. It's got that Gonshern Clever feel, kind of a little bit more in like a multiplayer Euro, because you're drafting and trying to collect things. And so it's not just kind of rolling dice and seeing what you can do with those dice, but, it's totally rolling dice and seeing what you can do with them. But when you also have that draft, you're also like considering how other people are going to interact. And it's got this neat mechanism where if you can complete a card on your turn, great, boom, do it with the dice that you rolled. But if you can't, you can't do anything. Well, sorry, you have to draft a card instead, or just, like, check a couple boxes. But on another player's turn, you can fill anything in. So you're able to do that, which is kind of neat. I guess we're getting a phone call. I'll pause for a second. I'm in the back office at the store, so phone in here starts ringing. That's Divvy Dice, my number nine. My number eight was Yukon Airways. I did a solo play of this on the channel. Really neat game. I really enjoyed this one a lot. You can move around different places. Ultimately, to me, it comes in a little bit too simple in what you're doing, but it's a really neat theme in that you're trying to, like, fly passengers to various locations in the Yukon area from, like, around Alaska and the Canada area and all that. And it's like a cube pusher, drafting, all kind of stuff, but really neat with the manipulation and all the different things you could do. You could check out my solo play on the channel, Step Into the Portal. Number seven is Marvel United, a really simple game, but it's a lot of fun to reset and go. Ultimately, I think this game is going to be judged when the Kickstarter comes in and you've got all the expansions and all that content, because right now, like, it's really a family game or, like, a Marvel fan game, because it's quite simple. Although, in its simplicity, it has choices. I don't want to say complexity, that would be the exact opposite of simplicity, but it has choices, and they are interesting, and it is fun to just shuffle up cards and go with your favorite superheroes, and it, you know, very simple in that approach, and the three different villains play pretty differently, but ultimately I feel like they'd have to shake that up to have, I don't know, what are they gonna have, 12, 15 villains, and 46 heroes, like, there's going to be a lot of repeat unless it's really creative. So we'll wait and see on that one. But ultimately, I enjoyed that a lot. A little bit better than that, I like Marvel Villainous. I probably like Disney Villainous better than Marvel Villainous at the end of the day. But, I mean, it's fun that it's Marvel-themed. But I think I kind of enjoy this Disney theme. Marvel, somehow it feels like Marvel when they achieve their goal to, like, destroy the universe. Like, hey, I did it. It feels kind of funny. Or to kill the hero. I suppose Disney's the same way. It seems to approach a little differently. But really, the only difference in this is that there's a common fate deck that you shuffle into, and then when you draw a fate card, you can play it on any player, as opposed to picking ahead of time, and it particularly targets them. And that has its pluses and minuses. Probably a little more minuses than pluses. But hey, if you want to play Marvel and you want to play Villainous, Marvel Villainous is your game. I don't mean that with the level of sarcasm it sounded like. But just, if you're looking for a Villainous game, but Marvel would be more interesting to you, then it's a no-brainer. So that one was a lot of fun. Number five was definitely a surprise hit of this year. I love this game. It's a co-op game from the Grand Gamers Guild called Endangered. And I think we reviewed this in our non-con as well. But a really neat dice-drafting co-op game where you're trying to protect endangered animals and meanwhile get countries to sign laws protecting these animals. And you've got to keep them alive. It's a little sad. Like, sorry, it's a lot sad. It's a little sad. Try, like, at the end, like, you start feeling those tears. Like, you don't want these animals to go, but it's a tricky game. They don't pull any punches on you. You know, those oil slicks are really going to take those seals down. And you got to protect them. Otters? Uh-oh. I think they're otters. So we're really going to take the otters down, and you've got to do everything in your power to protect them, and sometimes the dice just don't roll the way you want. Really clever mechanism in that when it's your turn, you remove your dice from cards, but the other players stay, and you have to play a higher number. But you can pick the order each round that you want to remove, so that becomes a lot of interesting chat between the players. But yeah, ultimately, sometimes you're just a little doomed in being able to do it. But you can pick your level of difficulty, so that works well. The next four are basically old games. One is new, it's a reprint, but these are all really, really good games. This is where the great line is to me. So Mandala, it did come out last year, so that's certainly a new game, but I've talked about it several times on the podcast. It's a great two-player game where you're building mandalas, which are like sand drawings drawn by monks, usually. And, yeah, it's just a really interesting game in how you play your cards and hand management and all that. And it just plays really, really well. And it's really interesting that when I score, you score. And that just gives it that, like, I'm just trying to score more than you, but we both get something. Which is a really neat thing. So there isn't, like, the take that. There's just the, hey, we're both going to score, but I want to score more. Collect more things. And the way the scoring works, where you're collecting the different colors of sand and then storing some, and that will... Based on when you collect them, they score more points. Really interesting. Number three is Stick'em. Oh, Mandala is published by Lookout Games? I don't know. I don't know. But I think it's Lookout Games. Stick'em is a reprint of a game called Stitchel, and it's published by Capstone Games. Just came out this year, so I would definitely say it's new, but it was in German for a while, and I had played it, and it's just a great... trick-taking game where there are no trick-taking rules, and that sounds super weird, but it's just a matter of how you play the cards, determine who wins, and you have a pain suit. You have a color that you're trying not to collect, and you let everybody know what it is, and then they are trying to get you to collect it. But it is interesting in that sometimes me scoring points is better than that one player losing a boatload of points. And so you start to, like, as you play multiple hands, you start to be like, I don't care about that person who's behind. I'm really looking to try to just stay ahead, almost an outrun the bear kind of situation, and that is what makes Stick'em really good, is that there are times early on where I'm just going to Stick'em, but there's other times where I'm going to Stick'em by scoring a whole bunch or not doing the plotted ploy that we had between players to hurt that one person, but instead gaining my own benefit. It's kind of a double entendre, I would say, for that one. That is Stick'em. Underwater Cities was my favorite game of... 2019 other than 2018, but then it kind of got published in North America in 2019. But Underwater City is a great game. We played it with the expansion. The expansion is just so good. It only cuts one round, but it cuts the round where you're setting everything up, and it just gives you starting things. So essentially you get options as to how you want to start the game, and you skip around. So you don't feel like you missed the beat at all, because you get to say, oh, I get all these cards, and how do I want to start, and what do I want my endgame goals to be, and what do I want to have, and then it just puts a couple extra things that you can do in. It's honestly, it's pretty easy to add in, and Underwater City is just a great game. It is a silent game where you're all staring at your cards, go, but I mean, I love that think when you get that. So it's not really a streaming game. We may try it at some point, who knows. It's very thinky. In terms of all that, but it's a great game. My number two that I played in August and September of 2020, and my number one game is an oldie but a goodie, and we played it, and it still tops this list, and that is Concordia from Matt Gertz and Rio Grande Games, R&D Studios, I believe is his publishing house there in Europe, and Concordia is phenomenal. If you like midweight Euros and you haven't played Concordia, it is a must-play in my mind. It is one of the ultimate hand management systems where you can play out all your cards, and then one of your cards says, take them back. Most notably, Aquatica, which is coming out this year from Arcane Wonders, and came out last year, I believe, in Europe, from Cosmodrome, is using this mechanism in a slightly lighter game, I would say. This one's got like that engine build where you're gaining bonuses, and you're playing through those cards, and you're drafting new cards, and then... at the end of the game, all the cards you collected are scorecards, and they tell you how you're going to score. So you've got to play to your hand, you've got to maximize your points on the board or in your hand, building that nice parabolic curve to maximize your points, which is to say, if you have less points on the board than what you're able to score in your hand, then you want to add to the board. If it's vice versa, then you want to add to your hand to maximize those points. But you can't always do that based on your resources. Oh, and it's a huge resource management game as well. So there's a lot going on. Many people would call this a heavy game. I imagine on your first couple plays it will feel heavy. As you play it more, it's lighter. And it runs like an hour, you know, with two players. I guess it's probably like a half hour per player. I did play a relatively long, like, four-player game of it in the middle, real dead middle of the lockdown. But ultimately, the beauty of this game is that it plays in an hour to an hour and a half, maybe even like 45 minutes sometimes with two players who really know it. And at that point, you could almost shuffle and go again if you're frustrated with how you did. But yeah, it is an ultimate medium-weight game to me, a heavy hitter in terms of that, and my number one game I played in August and September of 2020. So there you go, everybody. Thanks for listening. I know the podcast episodes have been a little bit. It is not because of the YouTube channel. It is because of school and all the hecticness going on with that in various places that I just haven't gotten a chance to record. I really want to get other people on the podcast, and that is just tricky right now because I don't really have other people around. and Kathy hasn't been playing as much, so she's just not as big as getting on there. And talking about games she only played once, she would like to have played them more often generally. So that is that. I hope all is going well. You know, if you're in the area, certainly stop down the store. Check out the new things that we've done. If you're not in the area, sign up for the YouTube channel. Step into the portal. Find us playing Marvel Champions live every Thursday at 6 p.m., as well as usually some other game after that. It sounds like we're going to play Super Fantasy Brawl tonight after the stream, so you can probably go back and watch that. And then just various other things that I've been putting up there with some other runs in Marvel Champions or Warp Drive, which is a really cool solo game that I've just got to edit my solo play and put it up as well. I did an unboxing for that and some other things that'll be happening on there, so there you go, and then ultimately I'm going to do a podcast live on there. I don't know why it just keeps not happening, but I'm going to do that at some point, so that'll be fun. I'll just go live and watch the video of me doing the podcast where I jump all around and throw my hands and do that intro and all that chaos. Should be a good time. Hey, thanks so much for listening and supporting us. We appreciate it a whole bunch. This is episode 158. I am the Brand, and until next time, I hope you step the board.